Hi, welcome back to The Bottom Line and Breakthrough Thinking, our special edition of The Bottom Line with John and Kathleen Hogan. And we were talking off the air about a couple different things that were going on, but you were saying that there's a question that you tend to get very frequently from students, and that's, are there better career options working for large companies or small companies? So what can you kind of expand on that?
Well, Kathleen has worked for both large and small companies in a different industry, and I'll let her answer hers in just a moment. Today in the hospitality world, if you're talking about restaurant chains, hotel brands, even the spas, travel agencies, there's tremendous consolidation. And so, for example, the top eight hotel companies in the world control something like 75 or 80% of all of the brands that are known in the world. But they're not necessarily all controlled or don't all manage them all, because there's lots of franchises or it's management contracts and whatnot. And in my career, I've worked for some very large companies, Sheraton. I've worked for some smaller ones. I've worked for family businesses. And what I find, I tell students all the time, and from looking at it for myself, it's kind of the question before, what is the end you're looking for? You have to try to determine where you want your career to go. Family businesses are absolutely wonderful as long as you're a member of the family. If you're not, you will always be that one step removed, and you'll probably be respected and well regarded, but you'll never have that chance for that final accomplishment or that final career title, that golden ring, perhaps, because if there's a son or a daughter or a spouse or somebody who is going to be entitled, because it is a family business. When you work for very large companies, the danger of politics is incredible. Even if it's somebody you don't know what you possibly might run into, or someone who doesn't like your division vice president, and so they end up with wars within divisions. And I've seen that at many companies that I've done speaking engagements, just making presentations, and I can see the infighting. As an outsider, I can just see the uncomfortableness and the real embarrassment for them, and that frustrates people as well. The companies that I think you have the best chance are the ones that are probably medium-sized ones, or the big ones that have won all of those recognitions and awards year after year for being family-friendly or good as far as continuing education for you to develop yourself, or for women in the workforce or diversity in the workforce, all those kind of things. And there are some really good companies out there that are of different sizes. But what happens is so many people say, I want to go work for that big brand up there that has all the five stars or all the fancy things. And that may work out if you're politically savvy enough to go through the minefield.
Or if you set up that goal, that can be your ultimate goal.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you have to go through the steps to get to that ultimate goal. But it's always something to shoot for. You know, it may be that you've got to do several stops. As we were saying before, the number of jobs that people have is just huge, and it's just like, on the website, you've got 3 to 8 seconds. Yes, I do remember numbers. but, you know, if you've got that short a period of time to catch their attention, maybe in order to get that 3 to 8 seconds equivalent from somebody at your ultimate dream job, you've got to make several stops.
And it isn't just about small versus large versus medium. It really is about the corporate manners, the senior management, how they work as a team, how their management style, that can make all the difference. I mean, the work that you're doing is going to be the same. You will excel or be mediocre at different levels, and a lot of it depends on how the team structure is and how much of an integral part the senior management is with the line level staff person. If you feel that you're all on the same page and that what you have to offer is of value, that when you come up with an idea, it is acknowledged and even implemented, then you're going to be very happy. You're going to be happier there than many other places, regardless of how far you can go. And when you hit that ceiling, guess what? You go looking for the next opportunity. Most people don't stay in a job, not even 4 years anymore, for the same company or at the same location. So it's not like in generations past where you work for the same company for your entire career and have a nice pension and retire. Heck, if you have a 401k that's performing well, you're doing great today. So, you know, your outlook starting your career has to be in tune with the environment in which you're going to work. And the first thing I would want to do is look at senior management and what their style is. And a lot of it you can figure out because of the awards that they have received. But not every company is a Fortune 500, and they can still be an excellent company to work for. So it's the way they deal with their people. If they don't groom their talent, if they don't care about keeping their talent, if they don't do everything they can to help everybody succeed together, then you're not going to be happy long term.
Why don't you share an example of in the last decade when you worked with, in New England, a small regional bank and one of the big ones?
Right. I was
working
for a bank that since has been absorbed by an even bigger bank. But in its day, it had done some gobbling of other banks itself, and it was doing quite well. And I worked in banking from the standpoint of mortgage lending. And no matter what you did, it wasn't good enough. And they would let you know that. And then they would let people go, and you would take on the work that was left. It would be divvied up with those remaining. But they still expected you to perform at the same rate, and they were trying to cross-train you to do to be a jack-of-all-trades, do some junior underwriting, be a customer service rep, be a processor, a closer, and be there for the loan officer with all those little problems that come up during any given day. So it was a lot of role confusion, and at the employee meetings, which were supposed to be where you acknowledge employees and give the attaboys, you did a good job this month, and this is how we're doing, we're moving forward together. Instead, we received from one of the high-level executives who flew in from California to, you know, say, this is great, but it's not good enough because our shareholders want more. And so as good a job as you all did, next time we're together, many of you will not be here anymore. Now, how does that make you feel as an employee as far as being appreciated?
Well, of course it doesn't.
No.
You know, the fact is there's something to be said for being a jack of all trades, at least understanding all the processes that go on throughout the whole process of whatever you're doing, be it the loan broker where you're dealing with the lender, you're dealing with the prospective lendee, and doing all the different processes. It's important to understand it all. But as I say, even with the CPA firm, I'm not going to try and be an attorney or a financial planner or any of these other things that are integral to somebody's financial well-being. I'm going to do what I'm good at and then put the team together to make it right. And that means having the right people, the right referrals to be able to help the client get to where they want to be. And it's almost backwards from what you're saying they were saying.
Yes, exactly. I agree with you, Mitch, that it's invaluable to be cross-trained so that you can help in many different areas as circumstances change or people are out sick. They need somebody to come and help. It's good to have a broad knowledge. That is different from being expected to do three jobs as one person every day all at once. Something is going to fail, and it's a lose-lose situation. Being cross-trained is always a wise idea. You should go for as much training as you can, as is offered, to find out different facets of what you're doing. That's not the same as doing them all at one time. But if you know how to do certain things, you become more valuable to the team and to the company as a whole, because you can be a go-to person in an extreme circumstance. That makes you...
Well, share the contrast with the main bank.
Oh, the contrast with a hometown savings bank. And when I was working with them, they had like four branches. They're up to 8 or 9 now. They've really been strong. And the reason they're strong is because of the culture of that bank. The president of the bank still is the president of the bank. It's a shareholder, state-chartered savings bank. But it was the teamwork. We all were important. We were all with a voice. And we had that spirit of cooperation. There was no, this is my job, that's not my job. You know, something needs to be done, pitch in. You know, end of the day, if the tellers were having a hard time cashing out, you know, balancing everything to the penny because there was so much going on in the bank that day and so many customers and the whole nine yards, we would stay. We would stay and help them find it. I mean, go through everything, find out where we went off, what was happening, so it all came out right at the end of the day.
But they provided the cross-training, from what I recall you saying,
right,
as an incentive, as a benefit, as something that we're all in this together against the world instead of it's me against you kind of situation. And that's what's so important within what some companies just don't ever deal with.
The compensation was fair for the industry that I was in, but it wasn't about the money. It was about the atmosphere in which you were trying to do your job, the support that you felt that you had, the cooperation and opportunity that was there. If you want it, go after it, and if you've got the aptitude for it, you'll go somewhere. That's a great feeling. That's enough to make anybody stay.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've had situations too, and it's very similar. You've got to have the upper level staff management has to be accessible, mm-hmm, along with the cross training, because otherwise it becomes he, me, they, and when you fragment, it's no longer going to run smoothly. And so there's no question you have that. Now, I also understand that you've been involved with some internships.
Yes. We're trying to bring the student corner of the site along. We want to get to the place where they are interacting with other professionals and that they are seeing what the real world is going to be for them as they move on from school into their career. We want them to have a say because they are the next generation. And we're trying to get that strong so that they're enticed to become members of the site as well. And then we can kind of work on, this has always been our hope, to work on mentorship programs. And it doesn't have to be just the founding associates mentoring others. It can be other members helping other members. I mean, it's so that everybody is buying in to the whole notion of rising together in whatever capacity that we're working and discover some of the opportunities. So in light of that, I thought it would be good to do some online articles that would be out there, cross-linking it back to our site, that they would come and discover us, that highlighted the different universities and colleges. I started off with some here in the United States, but I did one that highlighted Vienna. But we take a look at what the different colleges and universities are offering for their hospitality students in terms of internship programs. What's involved? How extensive is it? Where do they get to intern? It's, you know, not I grew up in this little suburban town and I intern just within my suburban town, but do I have a chance to go to Italy or to go to other parts of the world and work at high-level operations or stay at different times, have several, not just one internship experience, but several opportunities to experience more local hotels or restaurants in the region in which I am going to school. So I want to get the information out there. I want all of the students who are reading the Hospitality Online magazines to become aware, if they are not already, of what is out there so they can evaluate, am I missing out on something? Do I need to take a look at maybe transferring to a different school so that I have some of those opportunities? Because they're very, very important for getting that first position, that starting position in your career upon graduation. You are making contacts and establishing a network that is going to be critical for what you're able to do.
Right. And when you're talking about internships, I've always felt that you do one place, it's not necessarily going to give you all the knowledge. So as part of that, would you encourage maybe an internship at multiple hotels, say, so that they could get a breadth of knowledge of the different types of things that the industry is doing?
Yes, I would, but it doesn't have to be at it doesn't have to be a different internship at a different property or a company every time. It could be different positions at the same property and then another opportunity at a different it could be any blend. You want variety. You don't want to do the same thing just at different places. You want to do this, you know, be in this position at this particular company and then have a chance to do a position that you didn't really know anything about. And that's how you find out, gee, I never would have thought that. I'm going to change my career path and focus as a result of having had an opportunity to do that. And I'm discovering, oh, I'd rather work for this brand, or I'd want to work for a resort, you know, or who knows. But it's about exposure, because we all evolve. We all change. Our taste changes. Our interests change over time too with experience. So I would encourage any student out there to, you know, not just look at the college where they think they want to go, but look at some others. And so I'm trying to offer that information, give them a starting point. And I don't want to just deal with colleges here in the United States and Canada. I want different parts of the world, because our audience is in hospitality all over the world. You know, I'm very interested in Southeast Asia and what's happening there. We had an experience going in this past February to South Korea as a gift from our son and daughter-in-law. And what a wonderful experience it was for John and I to fly Singapore Air. And what they offer, yes, they have government subsidizing the whole operation. It's not really doable for a profit-making business here in the United States, and it would be so costly to refit everything for the way they have it set up. But just that contrast, that experience, you say, wow, what if? How could we improve it? You know, jeepers, if one of the airlines here just did this one simple thing, added this one thing, what a powerful advantage that would give them. So that kind of exposure. I love to learn about other people and other places. I love to see what it might feel like to live in their environment, you know, and it helps everybody on a personal level as well as a professional level if they have exposure to different parts of the world and the way things are done. It's all good.
Absolutely. It sounds so fascinating. And we'll be back in just a couple minutes with The Bottom Line Special Edition with John and Kathleen Hogan. Thank you.
Are you a able to ensure the safe driving and productivity of your employees? I'm Kara Lee with GPS Heroes, and with our plug-and-play GPS device, you can set geofences, get speeding alerts, and a full report card each week with driver reports and mileage, all to your computer or handheld device. It's easy to get and easy to use, in real time, with no service contracts. Just go to gpsheroes.org/21 and order yours today. That's gpsheroes.org/21.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Hi, welcome back to Breakthrough Thinking, and this is Mitch Spean. The bottom line, Dave is not with us today, but he's here in spirit. We were just talking about internships and some of the programs that these different companies have, and John, you had mentioned a couple things off air that I thought were real interesting.
Well, this a column I wrote this past week, the series is called Hospitality Conversations. And we, as what Kathleen was just saying, we reach out to talk to different colleges. And I reached out to somebody who responded to something else we had written, and he's a member now of our site. And he had been a heavy food and beverage with a big restaurant chain, a big hotel chain. And then about 25 years ago, he joined the faculty of Gwinnett Technical College. It's an unusual program outside of Atlanta. It's funded by the state lottery. So basically, you can get a two-year associate degree for free as long as you stay and you get a C or a better average type of situation. But what was really unique about their internship programs, yes, they got their students some academic and some work experience at Hilton, Doubletree, Hampton, and somebody else. But what they did that was different was for their students, they gave them – it was like a speed interviewing is what they really call it. They would get together 26 different employers. They would put them in groups of two and three, and you would get – you, the student, would get 10 minutes of questions that they would just fire them back and forth at you as if you were applying for a job within their particular organizations. And the students would have to answer it accordingly, and then they would give them a quick – 10 minutes of interviews, 5 minutes of feedback. And so by the time the student went through a series of three or four of them, whether they were the 18-year-old or somebody who was retired from business or another field, they have so much of a better understanding about what was expected and what kind of real opportunities would be out there. And that's the kind of thing we're trying very much to, within hospitalityeducators.com, is to go through and pull those different viewpoints together of people who are doing the hiring, people who are doing the training, people who are looking for positions, and to make it so that they have a kind of a central resource that they can go to for ideas. And so we have a lot of academics are starting to show tremendous interest in the site as well, which we're very pleased about, especially since it's called Hospitality Educators.
Getting those educators in would definitely make a difference in fact that you've got that background. I'm sure it was one of the major reasons why you selected that name and this process to begin with.
Well, it was, yeah. We We modeled the site after a number of other concepts that were more towards food and beverage and restaurant, and they had the word owner in it or restaurant business and that sort of thing. And we knew we were going to focus more on the hotel side of it while still serving restaurant people, but we wanted to go through and just make it that slightly different perspective, that it was going to have the nitty-gritty in there, but it was going to have some education as well as some training in there. So it was a slightly higher, lofty model is what we were looking for, and that's what we're having success at.
One of the things that we wanted to do at the outset, building the site, was to make sure that we were filling in that gap, that divide, that disconnect between hospitality, education in the colleges and universities, and what was needed in the business world of hospitality, because they might be book smart, but they're not job ready. And so we're trying to get the information pooled in one place and help build the bridge between academics and
real life.
I think when we were here last time, we talked a little bit about one of the things that's so essential for people entering the workforce is to understand about how to get customers, selling, marketing, all the pieces together. In several of these other articles that we had written, we talked about sales blitzes or student sales blitzes. Now, in today's world, going out and making a lot of cold calls is probably not tremendously efficient because we see all the no soliciting signs and nobody wants to hear you knocking on the door and bothering you type of situation. But there is something about an organized student sales blitz that they come in with such energy and such not innocence, but such enthusiasm.
Youthful
and
enthusiasm.
Such. And so you can go through, and so what happens is they don't get the doors slammed in their face. They have a very set script. They're only there to collect a little bit of information. And the success stories we got back from other colleges and other hotel companies was fabulous after we ran that story about 6 weeks ago, because she's going to do an article on the Temple University in Philadelphia program, because they have one of the absolute strongest examples of student blitzes. So again, it's trying to get putting all these pieces together.
It's got to be very gratifying to see the success that you're creating. But is there a way that you've been able to quantify the success that you've had, other than increasing membership? But seeing the bottom line is you're looking to help people succeed. And the only way that you can really do that is to see the end result. And obviously there's no true end result, because it's a constant moving forward. But has there been any way of quantifying what you've been able to accomplish?
One measurement would be membership, unique visitors to the site, how many visitors come, what the peaks are, so we know on the heels of what articles, what are the hot buttons, what are the best days of the week for reaching your audience, when are they most apt to come to your site. Make sure that you market with that in mind. The other measure would be, from our standpoint, the number of people that want to be associated with us, the number of people who want to become regular contributors, because now we don't have to do all the work, and you have many different perspectives and different ideas and approaches, which the audience benefits, and it helps John and I as well, and the other founding associates, because they all have busy lives and multiple endeavors that they are involved in. So that's another form of measure.
Part of our end in mind, what you were referring to earlier, is we really did want to at some point, and we didn't put an exact timeline on it, but we wanted to become the number one option, the number one resource for primarily for independent hotel owners. And we were really very pleased to see our webmaster in the UK give us that inclination and told us to use that actual from their research to start using that tagline on there because from their research they said they think we're just about there, which was very exciting for us. This is our 10th month, and each month we have set a new record as far as unique visitors who come for the first time. I mean, you can with the repeats too, but I mean the first time they ever come. Now, sometimes they stay for the 8 seconds, and sometimes they stay for 30 minutes. But there more and more people are coming, so that's something we can quantify and see the measurements as far as that, as well as the Google Analytics and all of those other measurements. Mm-hmm.
But as far as the end result, you know, whatever they take and put into practice on their job in their hotel. We really don't have an exact measure of that. It's a membership internet information sharing site, so we only have the analytics that are available to us with the different.
And that makes sense because you can only analyze so much, unless you're going to go out to these individuals and say how are you doing, and you know. To be able to do additional quantifying, you can only go so far.
Well, we also know, and it's exciting for us, when there's certain keywords, when there's certain search terms, and when we come up on the first page pretty consistently on a growing number of those not generic but kind of industry broad terms. We're always on the first two pages, and we're frequently in the top 4 and 5 now, which that's an exciting thing for us.
Yeah.
After only, again, 10 months and people who don't like technology necessarily. Mm.
The only way to do the measurement that you were talking about when you first asked the question would be through Hogan Hospitality. For instance, if John had a consulting assignment, he went and he was dealing one-on-one with a particular hotel or a particular company or a particular group of people, and then he could do the follow-up and the check-back to see how it was progressing. And you build that kind of rapport. That's a different kind of measurement than what the membership site is obviously going to give you.
Yeah. Like you said, it's a membership site to begin with, and the idea is to be able to give the information so that people can take advantage of it and obviously become a member of the site so that they can get even more information and improve themselves so that they can grow in their career. One of the things I was noticing on the website is that you've got an area for best practices. And I know that in most industries, they've got some sort of idea of best practices of just having – it's almost a discussion of the different areas that you can kind of get feedback from everybody on what are you doing to make things work for you. And I've been involved with that as a CPA. And what have you seen as far as best practices and – what you're trying to accomplish with that area of the website?
I'm seeing very much that people don't want to share. They want to keep it, and it's not proprietary. They just don't want to share their one little trick of the trade that gives them that one extra sale, that one extra customer, because it's so competitive out there. And as the global marketplace gets bigger, it gets even more and more so. And so we're able to get best practices from our contributors, from my 35 years in the industry of seeing lots and lots of things. And every time I go out and give a speech, or my programs are all very interactive. And so I will learn as much many times as what I actually share, because when we have the interactive sessions, they go through and say, well, gee, this is what we do. What do you think? And then somebody else in the audience will share it type of situation. And so I'm able to build a huge reservoir of ideas from listening to all of those things in literally every department. But there's a lot more people want to keep it to themselves now.
They don't want to lose their competitive advantage.
You've got that. There's a difference. It doesn't matter sometimes. In my mind, whether you tell them or not, it's implementing it anyway, and it's how you do it.
Well, as a person who loves to cook, I am free in sharing my recipes. Some people will not share recipes. Now, the difference is that whether you share it or not, you can take two people with the same recipe, putting it together, and it will come out slightly different. There's just a little, that finesse aspect of putting something together. You can tell somebody how to deliver a wow experience to the guest, but whether or not what they're doing actually gives that wow is all in their delivery, and it is as unique as the individual. So it doesn't really hurt to share information. In fact, I think that you get many more ideas when information flows freely. I'll share because you share, and we share back and forth, and then someone else joins in. And then before you know it, it has morphed into an even better best practice than we started out with in the first place.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you build on what you've done, and so you actually can come out better than where you started if you keep it to yourself. I find that many times that it just doesn't make sense to do it, just be out there. I mean, I loved your story about recipes because I remember I was living in California for a while, and there's a restaurant out there, Dinah's, that has this wonderful apple pancake. And so one time we decided to ask for the recipe. And you don't go back to the chef back there. It turns out the person up front knew the recipe because he had been the chef in the back previously. And, of course, he's starting out with 3 gallons of cream, 2 dozen eggs.
Break it down.
And not breakfast for two.
and my dad, being a physicist, broke all of this down so that you had to have an even number of eggs. You couldn't have a partial egg. It didn't work.
No, it doesn't, because when you're baking, while you may be able to logically pare things down, cut it in half, some of the measurements don't change. Even if you've pared down, you know, like salt or this, that, or, you know, those little subtleties, those have to stay the same, because if it comes out flat, if you alter everything without understanding the particular need of that one ingredient.
Exactly. And so when you're going back out and you're going back to what we were talking about before, dealing with people and dealing with ideas and being able to build on them, mm-hmm. just sticking with a script or not sharing, you're not better off. You're actually not improving because you're not sharing.
It becomes robotical. You're not thinking about what you're doing or what it means, what is the purpose of what you're doing. You're just going through the motions when you become so set in your ways. I mean, we recognize that, you know, people, personal level, same in business, you know, because as you said at the very outset, this is all about people.
Absolutely. There's got to be a way. There certainly is a something really important about just dealing with people, making sure that you're out there and making sure that there's synergy, where one and one doesn't necessarily make two. One and one can actually come out to three, and just everybody's better off. Mm. And it's just really important. And we will be back in just a couple minutes. This is The Bottom Line with Mitch Spien and Dave Isaac, who is here in spirit. We're with the Hogans, and we will be back in just a minute.
What does your landscaping say about you?
I'm friendly to our planet.
I xeriscape.
I'm water smart.
I harvest rainwater from my landscape and garden.
I'm a free thinker.
My landscape is filled with flowers year-round.
I'm energy conscious.
I water wisely.
Clemente Design Landscape represents your vision with an understanding of what a well-designed and cost-effective landscape can do for you. Call us for a free one-hour consultation and evaluation at 602-540-3773. That's 602-540-3773. Or visit the website ClementeDesignIsGreen.com.
Is it important for you to develop a financial plan without the potential conflict associated with commission sales? As a fee-only financial planner, I am paid by you and only you, my client. I'm not compensated in any way by the recommendations I provide. Have you heard the phrase, people do not plan to fail, they fail to plan? My experience has shown that this is too often true when considering one's financial future. If you're ready to take action, call me, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, directly at 602-235-0336. We'll discuss your financial situation and review some small or perhaps large changes that will help you obtain the financial future you desire. Don't let the lack of a plan affect your family's financial future. Call me, Bob Berger, at 602-235-0336 for a free consultation. Again, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner, 602-235-0336.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Welcome back to Breakthrough Thinking. This is the Bottom Line Special Edition. I'm Mitch Spean. We're here with the Hogans from HospitalityEducators.com. And we were talking earlier a little bit about the different ways of getting your message out. And that basically is the social media and the different things that have gone on. And I was kind of curious how that's worked for you and your what you've tried to accomplish. Kathleen?
I think it has helped. I mean, we started off with a strong focus before we even began the site with LinkedIn, and that's a professional networking service for professionals, as opposed to everybody and their brother on Facebook, which seems to be it comes across to me as being a little bit frivolous and popularity contest, bragging rights as to how many people you're friends with and so on and so forth. But the whole idea in having an internet business is you don't know exactly what avenue your audience takes to find your site. Some will find it through the Google search. Some will find it through LinkedIn. Some are more apt to trip upon your site through Facebook because that's their social media platform of choice. So you want to open it up to as much traffic as you possibly can to increase the odds of getting the proportion of people to your site. So availability. So we succumb to Facebook. And, you know, it's one of those things in life, never use the word never, because I can remember telling my daughter, who's in her 30s, I said, you know, I don't Twitter, I will not Facebook, and da-da-da-da-da, I'll never do this, and I'll never do that, and I am doing all of them.
Now we've got the confession.
Yes. Never say never. But it's working for us, and John, do you find that it's really helped the count as far as people coming to the site? Do you think it's played a
part? It's hard to tell precisely because outside of measuring how many, quote, friends you have on Facebook or how many people like your page and all that, and that sort of gets into a voting contest, and that can be the equivalent of some of the votes on American Idol where you get to vote 16 times. And so it's a challenge to actually measure the results. We had very strong personal name recognition in our articles globally. But the way to get them extended is also through the social media. And it's not just the ones we've mentioned, LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook and those. It's the Reddit and Digit and StumbleUpon. And there's literally dozens and dozens of other ones. When somebody reads something either on your site or they see it in another location, they can just push the yes, I like it, or they move it along to somebody else. And that, I believe, has helped us improve our marketing awareness and our readership and visits to the site. So, but does it actually sell anymore? That's very arguable. by almost everybody because it's so hard to precisely say that you have a new customer because of that one social media.
Well, it's the other thing that happens is once the name is out there and you get the recognition, it could be three or four generations before somebody actually goes to the site. And so it isn't necessarily a direct link to the site. It could be that, hey, check this out, and then somebody else says check it out, and then it finally comes back and to your site.
Yeah,
and
it does what they call going viral. You know, it goes to this person. Everybody's checking it out, word of mouth, you know, advertisement. It really is about exposure, exposing yourself to as many people on many different platforms, venues, you know, to see what takes. It's a numbers game, like sales, you know.
Oh, and yeah. So, I always said every time you get a no answer, you're that much closer to a yes.
Exactly.
And that's the point, and that's our next major, which starts next week, is our next major marketing effort is going to be, it's an organized email campaign through one of the distribution services, Constant Contact, who will go through, and it'll be a very simple, people that we know, we're not blasting it to thousands of people that we don't know, and anybody can get off the list with, you know, just push one button type of thing. But you go through and you can do what Oprah, do what any of the magazines or any of the really successful businesses out there as far as just keep getting your name in front of them in one more place. So in through legitimate emails and through campaigns and giving them messages that like the hospitality tip of the week or some message that will hit something near and dear to them in their world.
We find that questionnaires and contests especially seem to be a great tool in getting some participation from people who might be aware of you, but you haven't really heard their voice. Or they've been sitting on the fence, you know, I like it, I come back to it often enough, but I haven't quite decided to become a member. Sometimes a contest is just the thing to, you know, endear them to the site just that much further that they then become a member.
We did a contest 10 days ago from my blog to the website, and we got a few dozen entries that were making contributions. And it wasn't just to enter. They had to actually make a suggestion on a specific topic to them. And a bunch of them are going to get a short-term membership to just expose them to the idea of it. And so obviously they were had a tendency to be interested, and we're going to continue that approach too. Going to keep trying everything.
Yeah. Have you done like multiple levels of memberships or – Is it just yes or no?
We have students and professionals. We had multiple memberships, and everyone said it was too confusing and not necessary. So we just have the two, and students are a little less expensive because
and
they're students.
Within those two different categories, professional and student, they can either buy their membership for the full year at a time, or they can do a sign-up fee and just have a monthly installment against their credit card to, you know, become a member. And they can renew it, you know, whether you do it for 1 year at a time or on a monthly basis. If you stay without interruption, you can renew it without any changes. You know, no, you don't have to do the sign-up fee again. You just keep the monthly payment going and extend it out that way.
The really wonderful thing about technology is that we can offer this service that has 650 resources and best practices already for basically the cost of a postage stamp or a local phone call a day. I mean, it's that affordable. So it's just a matter of getting the word out continually and to as many people over and over again.
And you've done very well in getting everything put together. It's taken, you know, like you said, in 10 months to get to where you are now is a credit to both of you in the way you work together and work with others. I mean, working together has got to be the tough part because it's 24/7 to begin with. Now you've got this other thing added to it.
Certainly, you know, we're people. We're people that, you know, every day is not the same as it was yesterday when you wake up. Your thinking, your mood, your physical feeling and everything. And fortunately for John and I, temperament-wise, we are well-matched and equally important is that we are not both having a bad day on the same day. That's critical. But overall, it's our frustrations have been a shared frustration as we, you know, make those learning curves, as we cross those hurdles, you know, learning new things, and our frustration. Why can't I do this? You know, what is the problem? Or you ask questions, and one of the biggest frustrations is you get not the wrong answer, but not a complete answer. They leave something out, you know, or they make it sound, they simplify it, and there's an extra step in there that, you know, is frustrating to trip and trip and trip and then discover it. And you say, why didn't they just tell me that in the first place? Would have made everybody's life easier.
For example, have you ever sent an email to Amazon.com, which is a great company? They do lots of fabulous things. But sometimes in communications, they're not completely to the point. And so you have to send 3 and 4 emails because there's nobody to call. And so it's that sort of thing. And so that's the biggest frustration we've had is just dealing with the technology, that there is nobody to say, hello, what do you do, kind of thing. And you just have to kind of stumble over it. And we're getting there.
But I'm sure that there's positives to doing that too.
Oh, we have all those buzzwords she said a few minutes ago that I'm not sure I even know about the meta tags and all those other codes. We have learned a lot about technology, more than we really thought we had to, but it has been a good learning experience for us. And the fact that we have gotten such good visits to the site, membership's growing, we're serving a lot more people, we're getting so many more people want to say, can we contribute to you, can we cross-link with you, all this is very positive for us.
And
so that has been exciting.
On a personal note, it is wonderful when you struggle but you are able to learn and you discover, I can do this. I have learned so much. Who would have thought? And it gives you encouragement. It keeps you alive. It keeps your brain stimulated. It keeps you in play. And goodness knows, the way everything is going economically in this country, we're, you know, not depending on Social Security, and we're going to have to work for the rest of our lives. So it's good to know that we can continue to grow and learn and master new skills. You know, sometimes it's good that you don't know what you're getting yourself into, but you discover it as you go, because otherwise you'd be totally overwhelmed and you'd never begin.
Oh, it's like having a family in that sense.
Yes. Yes.
Because if you think about all the things that you need to do and where do you want to be before you get there, you'll never get there because you'll never even start.
Right.
So you've got – there's a point where it's a leap of faith.
Yes.
And beyond that, it's taking things and saying, this is what I truly want to do. You know, it's something where when you get up in the morning, you look forward to going and taking care of what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. It hasn't been like that every day, Mitch. And, you know, most anybody in business out there, they're lying if they say they wake up and just can't wait, you know, every single day to get in there. Some days, you know, you have to push yourself. And it's worth it. It doesn't feel like it when you're in it and you're struggling. But when you get beyond that, and it's worth it.
I find the same thing. With myself as well. So I totally agree with you. And as we start wrapping up, one of the things that I want to make sure that the audience knows about is how we ended up linking together and getting started. So why don't you give that?
Well, when we came up with the whole concept and of what we wanted to build, we recognized that it was going to be very important to surround ourselves with the right people. You know, the commercial, hey, I've got people. You know, we needed to have the support in place. And we knew that we didn't want to be lost in the banking, like Bank of America, which is all numbers. And, you know, we needed a banker who was going to work well with startup family businesses, you know, that they were all about that they were reachable. And so we decided we wanted to go with the community bank. We searched out some of the banks in this area, and we happened to choose Johnson Bank. We're both familiar with S.E. Johnson and their creed, and liked after our interview. We interviewed the bank. The bank did not interview us.
And that's the way it should be.
Yes, but too often.
And we checked several banks. We didn't just go to them. We checked a number of them. So
too often, you know, you don't have that opportunity with banks. The bigger the bank, the less likely you're able to interview them. So anyway, it was through Johnson Bank when we were asking, you know, well, we know we're going to need, you know, a CPA. We're probably going to need an attorney at some point. Who would be good for us? So it was through their network that they suggested you. And one other, we interviewed both of you and chose you.
Yeah, the title of this program, The Bottom Line, is wonderful because it's so much about networking and having the opportunity to work with people that you like and that you want to work with.
Yeah. As we wrap it up, why don't you briefly give us your contact information, and thank you so much for coming today. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having us, Mitch.
Well, it's hospitalityeducators.com, and you can reach me at john.hogan@hospitalityeducators.com or kathleen@hospitalityeducators.com. And
again,
thank you.
Thank you, and that's The Bottom Line in Breakthrough Thinking, and we'll see you in a week.